PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, repping my Toronto Blue Jays gear. And with me today is my good buddy, Mr. James Miles. You know him from his excellent work on the THP homepage, including an education zone that recently came out. You could probably talk a little bit about. We'll see what happens. Either way, James, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me back on, buddy.
Listen, it wasn't about me. There was a thread that started on THP yesterday. We're recording this on a Wednesday, so Tuesday. And they said, who do you love having on the podcast? And for some reason, people kept mentioning you, dude named Dean. Like, I don't really understand why.
I know. I got a few mentions. I was kind of impressed. I was getting tagged. And I'm like, what's going on? What did I do wrong? Oh, yeah. No, they like me, kind of.
In my defense, I don't know why they listen to me either. So I guess we're just going to have to embrace it. And it's kind of lucky I don't have Dean on this week, because I think all we talk about is baseball, being that the World Series is starting on Friday, which is when this episode will be dropping. So I'm going full non-dress Go Blue Jays apparel today. And I know you're deeply invested in baseball.
I'm very happy for you.
Yeah. Yeah. The baseballers.
Yeah.
You're lucky you're not in town. I'd make you play golf and then watch the game.
Well, I mean, that'd be fine.
Wouldn't be too bad.
Drinks are cold.
The drinks are very cold and delicious when they win. What's going on in your world?
Chasing kids, trying to finally be healthy for the end of the golf season as the weather starts to turn. I teed off this morning and it was 41. Mm-hmm. So, it's of course, you know, the body cooperates now after we get past this. And I got past the Morgan Cup and all the important things. And now it's like, oh, you're healthy again. You're good. So,
yeah, there's something about fall golf, man. It's either you can't wait for the season to end, which is rare for me, or things just slowly come together. And I've had a big discussion with a couple of buddies that I play with regularly here, and we could definitely go into it if you want to. They talk about how, like, the fall season is just easier to play. I don't know if it's the conditions are supportive because the rough gets a little thinner, the greens are still rolling pretty good, or whether it's just the one example they gave to me was that there's just the expectations are so much lower than they normally are that they just go out and swing. And at that point it's like, well, I can't second guess when I'm just swinging. what do you think about that? Or do you tend to play better in the fall or no?
I play better in the fall here because it gets really, really windy here. And, you know, I don't fear wind golf. When you live here, you kind of just have to acclimate to it. So the beginning of fall and then the beginning of spring is whenever it's the craziest. So it kind of, it plays into that pretty well. So I enjoy it because I get more creative. And when I'm getting more creative, I'm basically thinking less. And it's just it's kind of like what you said. It's just trying to hit the ball and hit golf shots. And that's more fun. We're really lucky right now because everything's just in insanely good conditions. Even though they aerated 2 weeks ago, they brought in a crew to do it and they did it right. And so we're already back rolling wonderfully. So it's, I like being able to golf in a hoodie more than anything. I think that's why I like fall golf.
Yeah, I've traditionally played my best golf from a scoring perspective in the later months of the year. I wonder for me if it has a little bit to do with the heat, because it gets so hot here for me, my Canadian blood. Not much I can do about other than just sort of hang in there. And it takes a lot out of me when I play and it's like real hot and sweaty. And I don't know if that has an impact or not, or just as my buddy mentioned, like there's just a level of, I think partly appreciation for being out there, because you know you're counting down to the days before the misery strikes and you're stuck inside. But there's something about this time of year that it tends to be the best golf is played. Like my lowest rounds are always in late August, September, sometimes early October. It's never in it May or March or April. So
here everything softens. Like we tend because as temperatures change, everything retains more and everything softens. I don't know about for up there if it's about the same, because you guys get more moisture and everything than we do usually anyway. But I think that's part of why I enjoy fall golf here so much more as well, We finish all of our competition stuff where it's like hitting into asphalt, which is great when they're good greens, but like when everything on the course softens, you get away with a little bit more, I feel like. So that is one aspect here.
Yeah, we haven't really had super consistent years here. I feel like every year we have a dry spell that is at a different time, and it's chased by like crazy rains
all at once.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like within a week we get like inches upon inches of rain, and to the chagrin of our head agronomist, our head groundskeeper, it's an incredibly challenging. It's been an incredibly challenging couple of years. So where I would normally say, yes, I agree with that. I would say the more consistent thing would be the wind here, but it's it's not every day. It's like, I'll admit I watch the weather to decide whether it's worth taking a half day off based on whether the wind's above or below 10 mile an hour, which is why we're recording today and I'm not playing golf, because it's absolutely beautiful outside.
There you go.
But yeah, I don't think there's a consistency level there, but even when there is, I remember playing your greens are a bit firmer than what I'm used to. So our fairways firming up is a good thing because it shortens the course a lot. Whereas our greens typically stay pretty soft, at least to where you can create some action on it. Like not super, super soft, but you can still control the ball on it. What really changes here is the firmness of the fairways. And when it gets soft here, I mean, yeah, it's a little easier to stay on the fairway, but you're also adding
some long shots into your
many
greens.
Clubs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know, man. I'm just happy we're still playing, and it's, you know, middle October. It kind of crept up on us. I don't know what it's like been like in Oklahoma, but here in Ohio, we've had great weather. And up until this week, it's been 70s at the worst. And now it's like low 60s, touching 50s. The tee time this weekend is going to be a little chilly, starting in the 40s. You know, that really hasn't hit yet. So, you know, maybe we haven't gotten a full taste of the fall golf here yet.
Well, I mean, we are setting our hottest October on record. We were in the 90s last week.
Wow.
So, and everything's been consistently mid to upper 80s at the end of day. So yesterday it was like, I think our high was 67 for the day, and my kids woke up in the morning whenever it was like 45, and they've got coats and they've got hoodies and jeans. I'm like, guys, it's not that cold. They're like, we're pretending, we're wishing it into. So, and, you know, today it's going to be like 76 again, but
kids don't know how good they have it.
No, it's been a really hot, like, and that, what sucks about that is I know my days are going to get numbered, because we will just skip straight from this to like bitter cold for a while. So, but any day out there is a bonus day, and I'll take it, especially now that I'm kind of healthy. Quasi.
Yeah, that's pretty much Ohio in a nutshell. You don't like the weather here, from what I've been told by the locals. Just wait 5 minutes and you'll get
a different thing too. Yep. You get all of it, no matter what.
I think we should talk aeration, even though I know it's like everyone just cringes at the thought of it. There is a very clear skill to getting it right on the golf course, and not just from an application standpoint, but from a timing standpoint. We have had a lot of discussion here locally, and by locally, I mean my golf course, which is what my world revolves around. And there's been a debate, like, do it earlier. If you don't do it, they don't heal fast enough, and then you're stuck with these little dots on the green, little inconsistencies all winter long, which is really frustrating because we are able to play most months of the year. Mm-hmm. So this year, finally, the weather cooperated, and we, despite a little bit of sadness, we punched the first week or the second week of September. And
that is early.
And it was early. And normally when that happens, they'll say, all right, we're going to schedule this day. And for the last 4 or 5 years, the day they scheduled, it rains. And then they push to the next week, it rains. And then they push it to the next week, it rains. Like, it's unbelievable. It's almost like the guy's got a sense of humor up there, and he knows our aeration schedule and is just messing with us. So this year was the first year, and I can't remember how many years, where we actually got to do it on the scheduled date. Uh-huh. But then the rains came the next week, we got a ton of growth over the course of a few weeks. And now the greens are pristine. And it's like there was always a debate of aeration marks either disappointment as the greens slowly get into form to start the year, or a reminder that your season's about to end at the end of the year, at least here in the months that don't play year round. So it was kind of a weird experience for us where we're like, oh God, it's that time. And then 3 weeks later, it's like perfect out there. And you know, it's been fun because we've had the extra, but it's also been great because, man, they came back in such a big way.
Also, we are so our member got pushed back later in the year by about a month. We usually do it like in the middle of August, and it's
yeah, just, that was late for you guys.
It's miserable because it's so just hundreds of degrees and everything else, and it's fine. I mean, it's fun, whatever. So we pushed it back, so we got to use the evening times and everything else. And the way they scheduled it, and our superintendent was pumped because it allowed him to like basically trick the course out as much as he wanted.
Mm.
So the week prior to it, and we played it on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the week prior to, they were double cutting and double rolling every day. And so when we played in it, like they were literally the fastest I've ever played our greens. I came from Victoria, right? Victoria National on fast greens to come home. And I played in this the fall. And I'm like, well, okay, things are going to slow down. No, nothing. Nothing slowed down, nothing altered from it. And then they built it up to where the following Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they closed the course and they aerated.
Wow. Good.
So they went right into it. And now a few weeks later, like I didn't play it all last week because of fall break and chasing kids and stuff like that. But I got out yesterday with the guys in the noon group and I was shocked because they're healed. They brought in a crew that used the small tines and they did it right. And the weather cooperated, and it's kind of like your situation. Like all of a sudden they're rolling pure. And I'm like, well, this is fantastic. Why did I hate aeration so much? But then you remember like, when we get back to spring, I'm going to be like, yeah, this is why I hate aeration, but it's a necessary evil. But when it's done right. And I think that's the catch around here. Like I grew up working at a golf course, and when we punched one of the local courses, like it was big tines done ourselves in no really caution thrown to the wind as far as everything goes. And we use snow shovels to get the plugs off the greens, and everything just got beat to shit. And the sand was from the river and all the stuff. So to see the difference of it whenever it's done right and it's timed right and it does work out, and Mother Nature's kind of nice to you. It's not as scary as it is. I think you're right in the mental aspect. It's either the sign of beginnings or ends of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Well, getting it right is a big deal. I went down a bit of a rabbit hole about a month ago watching videos on YouTube of course design, layout, application, aeration. And it's amazing how many different ways there are to do it, but I assume how many very disrupting ways there are to do it. And I think it's also a representation of if you maintain your course well, you can do these slightly different and less impactful ways rather than like the mega holes they pump in. There's Aqua Blast now.
They hydrojet them. Yes.
Hydrojet is what it's called. Yeah. And then there's like all these different ways to do it, which is interesting. I actually started talking to one of my buddies about it. He's like, I don't care. He's like, I'm really interested in that. I was like, started the talk. He's like, I don't Never ever mind. Need to know about that. I was like, but it's cool. He's like, yeah, but we've had some interesting discussions, but apparently that was at his limit of interest for golf course design. He's more of like a purist on the design aspects. So it's funny, man. Necessary evil, but my goodness, when you get back out to appreciate what it does for the golf course, the greens firm up a little bit, they breathe a little bit better, they don't show as many tire prints, as I like to call them, the footprints. Mm-hmm. All good things, and I'm super happy that it's the last I get to think about it after this podcast for, I guess, until April, maybe even May.
Roll back around, right?
Yeah. And at that point, I'll be thrilled. Like, oh, it's aeration season. That means we're going to golf more soon. What about off-season plans for you? Are you going hard in the sim this winter? Are you going to take it easy? What's your mindset after this year?
Get in better physical shape as far as stretching and everything else, because that's kind of how I finally, you know, 40s caught up with me And this year was rough with the ribs and everything else. So my big focus during the winter is going to be that, getting a little more flexible for the first time in 20 some years. And then I'm going to do sim work. But I think this year, instead of just going all out on everything, I'm really going to focus on wedges and stuff that I can control. And just try to ingrain good contact as much as I can. So on the days that I do get out, because I get out every month, like there will be a period of time in every single month that I will at least be able to get several rounds in. But that way it kind of dials around. Because last year I went kind of the other way, and I think I paid the price for it a little bit. I'm also trying to get more conservative in how many thousands of golf balls I hit, just for the sake of hitting them and you know, doing things with a purpose, which is weird for me.
Jeez. Yeah. So I think it's always been interesting watching you play golf. We go about it in a pretty different way from a headspace. I think you have a way about you that you just, like, especially when you get on the range, it's like hit ball, move on, hit ball, move on. Like that sort of like head down mentality. I see a lot of that old football style in you. You just
put your head down. I hate the range.
You put your head down and you do it.
I hate the driving range.
It's so specific. And whereas I'm like sort of lazy about it, I take my sweet time and, you know, think through everything. I'm curious whether or not the amount of sim time you put in at this point, or will that change the way that you approach just hitting a golf ball? Will you try and treat it the same way as you would on a golf course, or you just put your head down and swing? What's the mindset there?
Hopefully more like I treat it on the golf course. Cause I mean, you've seen, I've slowed tremendously over the years as far as how I approach golf shots on a golf course now.
That's why I specifically said the range. Yeah,
no, it's one of the guys yesterday, he's like, you're usually fast, but you're like ultra fast today. I'm like, I haven't played in 2.5 weeks. Like I'm just out here swinging.
But
it's the difference where I went out today and, you know, I birdied one and I birdied two and I'm like, okay. So then you settle in and you catch yourself in a completely different rhythm and cadence.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggle with that on the range. Part of that is our range. I can't hit driver or anything long anyway. So I'm mad that I'm there. But the problem too is on the sim I've fallen into with, you know, whenever I'm reviewing a piece of equipment, you inevitably start to chase numbers a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the head down focus on this, and then it becomes really easy to start overswinging and doing all the other stuff instead of just letting whatever happen. So that's my goal, is if I can take what my on course mentality has become, which is actually a pretty big benefit to my game, and I can transfer it to practice, then I think the next year could be a lot better. It was an underwhelming year, other than us almost winning and getting screwed by a ninth flight. But, you know, there's that.
I don't remember that. All I remember is dominating the field and making people laugh. That was Crown and Sprite Zero. Yeah.
Crown and Sprite Zero.
Yeah. you mentioned wedges, and I'm really curious about that because it's actually on my list of things that I didn't expect to get to talk about today. What does your wedge game look like? And I don't mean full game. I mean like inside 40 yards. Where's your mindset at with that?
I'm pretty damn good with the wedge inside of 40 yards. It showed in the Morgan Cup, and it also has bled over to just on the course and everything else, because I think the benefit was this year, whenever I did tweak everything, I could still go out to our short game area and I could hit wedges. Mm. And so that inside of 35 yards and in thing, I found peace and creativity. So the more creative I let my wedge game get, the better it works with. I do still lean on my lob wedge a little more than I would like to. And I've actually today I was working on that. I hit 56 a lot more today than what I normally would. And I think in that creativity, everything else kind of comes together, but it's probably the strongest part of my game right now, which 4 or 5 years ago, people would have laughed if I'd have told them that.
You know, I end up watching these videos or watching the pros hit and chip around the green. And I take a second when I look at them and I'm like, wait, they're trying to chip that in. Like yeah. it's very methodical, intentional. Their goal is to get it in the hole. And I feel like there are lots of times where you don't hit it in so many times. Suddenly it's like, all right, let's just get this close. And like you're hitting a shot with the intent of trying to get it close. And I feel like you get away from that potential to hit it into the hole. Yep. And each time I take a step back and think like, are you doing enough to create a shot that could potentially go in? I have to pause and really think about it, because I don't know why it's such a fleeting feeling to try and hole a wedge shot or like a greenside chip, as opposed to just, you know, not making a big mistake. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, I think. And so for me, it becomes a progression issue. And even whenever I was coaching high school golfers, you could see it like as the confidence, it's not even a confidence thing, but as the focus changes from I'm gonna make this to let's just get it close to eventually it does. You catch yourself being like, all right, let's just get it on the surface and get a putter in my hand. Well, now like your areas of, for me, my areas of intention have changed. I had a couple yesterday with the guys in the group that I chipped two in, and I had another one that was really close, and the whole mindset was they were wicked lies, but my focus was on the spot that would give me the chance for it to go in to save the hole, not let's just get it close, tap it in and move on, or let's just not leave this in the bunker, or let's, you know, all the other things which can tend to happen. And my mind with my ADD really does wonder at times, especially if I'm playing in something that's a little bit slow around. But I think for me, it's intention. And when the intention is to try to make something with a wedge, you're not going to make most of them, but you're giving yourself every opportunity to. And if you do that, then you're usually going to get the tap ins. You're usually going to put yourself in better positions for the next shot without telling yourself, hey, you don't have to be perfect. Just be okay. Because I don't know. I'm getting more and more focused on intention over the golf ball, especially with a wedge.
You can't tell my son that. He is at 9 years old, determined to chip everything in.
I love it. It's fearlessness though. Like that's,
yeah,
that was the beauty of coaching high school kids too. Like the best ones were, it was usually in their younger years because they were fearless and they didn't know any better. And then you would see some that would taper off because all the other stuff starts to creep in and you start, don't miss, don't do this. Well, screw that. Like if you feel confident enough to try to make it, go try to make it.
Yeah. Well, I think he was about an inch into the fringe the other day after a pretty bad chip, and he's got his wedge in hand. I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, I want to chip it. I was like, all right. And he sort of thinned it and it blasted by the hole and he's mad about it. I was like, dude, I don't know what you expected. We're still trying to figure that out. But yeah, the level of fearlessness is so funny. But it's also about complexity. Like, knowing your golf course now, most of your greens are elevated from green side. So it's not like you've got a guaranteed flat lie that's a guaranteed flat chip. Like you, it does force you to have a lot of creativity, which, you know, I think that's a good thing. I think I hate watching guys in the fringe be afraid of a wedge, and I understand it completely. But I love the creativity that comes in a wedge game and the requirements that are there. And it's just fun to watch. And it's also fun to do, and especially when you pull it off, like those are the real stories. The guys won't remember if you chip it or putt it to an inch, but if you flop one from an impossible lie that ends up an inch away, like that's all they'll talk about for the next hole, you know?
Well, and that's the interesting, because we have a lot of undulations around bunkers and the way that everything is curved, and the greens are a little elevated. So you're always ball above your feet, ball below your feet, uphill lie, downhill lie, a lot of short-sided situations, everything else like that. So that was the interesting thing with going to Victoria National with a bunch of handicaps all over the place. And one of the main things I noticed is how uncomfortable some of the guys got the closer they got to the greens with these tight lies and everything else off of it. And I was just like, this is I have a bigger green to aim at now because these greens are way bigger than mine. And the creativity is still kind of there. You get to hit all these shots and try all these things, but it is interesting to see mentally that dynamic change. And you can really tell who's, I don't even want to just say comfortable, but who's willing to be comfortable, I think is a better way to put it.
Yeah.
You can't fear a wedge shot. Like you just can't.
Well, People certainly do.
Yeah. But you've already lost. Like, you've already put yourself in a situation where if you hit a good shot when you're fearing it, then you got lucky and you're telling yourself you got lucky. Oh, I got away with that one. Well, that's crappy confidence.
Yeah. I feel like we should probably talk about it since you've mentioned it a few times. You are now
winning the Morgan Cup.
You are now a Morgan Cup champion. It's been over a decade in the making for you. It has been an emotional ride going from different versions of trying with different teams to finally in the last one succeeding. You sent me a picture of you with just pure, I don't even think it's joy. It's just wholeness.
Shock.
No, it you looked complete, my man. Like, I know this meant a lot to you. Long and short of it is James and I became friends over a decade ago. And not long thereafter, we had to go against each other in an early version of Morgan Cup. And I think you were sponsored by Cobra that year, if memory serves correctly.
I've always been Cobra.
Yeah. And we actually had to go head to head in singles. And after it was done, we rode around together and just soaked it up. And a really great moment to experience what THP has to offer. And we heard it from Doug last week when he got to experience it for the first time. But man, that was a decade ago. So you finally won your first and only Morgan Cup. And I assume you are happy.
I mean, it was funny because, like, I sent you that picture, and that's what, even when we came off and inside and everything, and, you know, JB on the website, Josh, everybody knows Josh, but Josh and I and you, we've been around each other for ever now. And that's what he looked at me. He's like, we did it. We finally did it. And like, and I knew part of that was like, I was trying not to build it up to be more than it was, because it is, everything is awesome about it. But the fact that it was the last opportunity ate at me a little bit, and I didn't play great, but it was the happiest I've been on a golf course probably ever coming off. And it was just because I did the things I needed to do. My golf game has come so far. Yeah, there it is. My golf game has come so far from whenever we played back in the day in Myrtle Beach. And it was just, I don't know, fulfillment. So, and it's nice to have that feather in your cap that, I won one of them.
Isn't it interesting to be able to look that far back in your THP history now to think of how far your golf games come?
I was in my 20s.
Yeah. Don't say that.
I'm in my 40s now.
That's killing me.
That's where we are with it. But no, it was, I had just started golfing. Like, I'd been golfing like 2 years at that point, 3 years. And I was just athletic and had a hand eye coordination. Swing hard. You know, and
swing hard, ball go far. Yeah.
Sometimes, but for it to come where it is, where like I'm riding with people who it's their first experiences and their first, you know, experience of what THP is. And it happens to be the Morgan Cup. And like, I'm calming them down and, you know, talking them through things and going through everything else. And I have those moments of like, while I was out there, I was like, holy shit, time changes and things change. No, it's probably the coolest thing THP related as far as experiences that I could ever hope for. And I've done all the cool things. I've got to captain and some cool things, but this is always the one that just personally I wanted. And knowing it was going away, there was, I don't know, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, a little bit of a hat tip to the guys over there who are creating new things. The Morgan Cup might be finished, but Cobra and THP collaborations are not. Yep. There's something
onward and upward.
Cobra Classic that'll be coming next year. So I would imagine a lot of folks are really chomping at the bit to find out what that is. I believe it will be held at Ballyhack, which is another golf course that
I love. Ballyhack
requires quality golf shots and a good short game. Otherwise, you're in deep, deep doo-doo. Tell me about Victoria National from a golf course perspective. You've played a lot of different courses around the United States. You've experienced quality at different levels. Where does Vic stand for you?
That is my favorite golf course I've ever played.
Wow. And Arnie's offended, for the record.
Well, I I think the biggest thing with Vic is, and Jeremy and Josh tried to tell me going into it, everybody I talked to that had played it tried to tell me, because you look at the water and you look at the pictures and you're like, oh, the water, the water, the water. The water's not the issue ever, hardly. Just a couple tee shots. This is where the water is. The rest of it is just, it's the layout and the rough and the way it's carved in. And I love Ballyhack because of the way Ballyhack is carved in, but Ballyhack doesn't have the nuance that Vic does. Like Vic is a, you can play it as a shot maker's golf course. You can be aggressive. Like there's plenty of opportunity if you're comfortable with it. But like, I think on all the times and the go rounds that we played out there, I probably played every hole differently every time almost. And sometimes got away with it. Sometimes got my butt kicked, but I just, there's something about the way it is visually, but also where the trouble is, how the trouble is, and how much it makes you respect your surroundings without, I mean, it's only going to hurt you if you're just all over the place. And I was at times, I mean, I hit the ball, golf balls in some god awful places, but I don't know. It's my favorite. It's from THP experience and probably from just a golf course all around. And maybe part of that's the facilities and everything that go with it too. But the course itself, I could play that course every day and be happy. And that's about the biggest compliment that I can ever give a place.
Yeah, I think that there's something interesting that goes on in most of the holes where they have a design feature that draws your eyes away from your target.
Yes.
It's really curious. It starts, I think, on hole two, because hole one's just a bear down the hill. It's a long par four that you better play well. But then as soon as you get on hole two, there's something about the hole that takes your mind or your visual away from your target line. I think some of the better examples are that par four that's just after the par three. And I know I'm just throwing numbers out there, that has a bit of a waterfall on the right side. Is that five or six?
Sure.
You know what I'm talking about? The slow trickle waterfall down the right side. But what you're not paying attention to, it's like a three-tier green. And if you hit it in the wrong spot, you're in horrible shape.
And I think that's a big part for me, is like it rewards not just like, it's not just blind hitting greens. Like it rewards you hitting in the right section of a green. And sometimes the play is not on the green. Like I had a few holes where things are tucked where I knew I would rather have a wedge where I could take off the first two tiers to get back to the third tier versus missing on the green and being down there and having a 70 some foot putt up two tiers that you're just kind of hoping for. It's just, but you're right. Every single hole has something that takes your eyes somewhere where
you wander.
And then you get out on the fairway and it's like, oh, like that visual's totally different than what's the reality of it all is.
Was there a hole that really stood out to you?
15.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. Why?
I love 15. I love two. No.
Played it smart, like a good boy.
I love everything about it as far as where the reward is and where the risk is, and being able to put pressure on people you're playing against if it's that situation. I made a huge putt in my first match from the back tier to the front. It was 70 some feet to win that hole. And you know, so that's probably a highlight. But again, I had to punch out and take my poison because of the situation I put myself in the second shot. Likewise, I saw some guys just go at it. And it's awesome that you're rewarded or you can still claw back into it. I don't know. There's something about the visual of that hole that just, and it's an ass kicker. Like all those closing holes are as build. And I think that was the biggest thing for me. There was nothing about Victoria National that I was told going into that experience that I came away going, because every other course, I feel like there's some things.
Okay.
You can be like, well, that, you know, okay. But like Vic delivered on all of it. So
I'd love to hear, now that you've played with the club so long, Cobra gave you a chance to play pretty much the full year with their product. And, you know, I've hit a fair few of their clubs this year. The driver's excellent. The 3D printed irons, which I believe you had in play, are absolutely outrageous. I'm really curious about your thoughts overall. But more specifically, because you talked a lot about short game, the Cobra Wedges, which I think took a pretty big step in the right direction this year.
They took a monumental leap. And I talked to Doug about this several times. I talked to first about it at the PGA show at the beginning of the year. So then to get to talk to him again when we were at Vic about after having him in play all year, because I've gone through two sets this year and that's all I played wedge wise. I think for me, the shaping became very, very similar with a very, very popular wedge out there. And it was one of the smartest things they could have done because it's a shape that works, but then they put their spin on it. And for the first time visually from the back, from the front, from the top, Cobra has a complete wedge. Prior to, there was always something that was even just in the bag. They didn't look as good as Vokies, as Cleveland's, as other things with that. And I think now that that's gone, and now you get it into more hands. They also got more versatile in their grind options. You know, they offered a drop sole, which is more of a full grind without the scallop in the back of it. And I think that opened it up to a lot more people, for me especially, in a couple of the spaces, and a little more aggressive in the lob wedge, which is what I need because of how I play around the greens. I of all the things I was happiest about, and at the same time coming into, well, I could say when going into it, it was my biggest concern prior to going to the PGA show and seeing them. And then I was like, well, everything's going to be fine. Because in my previous experiences, that's kind of where I struggled a little bit, mm-hmm. was with the Cobra wedges. That's not the case now. So
yeah, it's a big ask. And we talk about this on THP at least a couple times a year as a community. Are you making concessions having one brand in your bag all the way through? Mm-hmm. And it's rare that you can find a person who is perfectly fit with everything from top to bottom. And I feel like this gave them a much tighter opportunity to say, you know, we are closing the gap, and yep. where we are exceptionally strong, we will be stronger. And where we were maybe a little bit underwhelming, we'll at least become strong. And I think mm-hmm. that's a big, big tell for them as they progress into the new sort of new era of wedges, new era of, I mean, their putters are definitely unique now and different. There's a lot going on.
It's interesting because of all the things and all the talk that went through, if it's any other year, I think the wedges get a lot more talk, but everything else, like with the Max K, and then you have the 3D printed irons, the limiteds or the 3D tours, whatever you want to call them. And then you get into hybrids and some of the other stuff with it all. There's so much all around that I feel like the wedges actually went a little bit under talked about. And it's a hard, hey, you and I have talked about it a lot. The wedge segment's the hardest one to crack into, in mm-hmm. my opinion, because people are so comfortable with what they are comfortable with. We've seen some really good wedges from smaller companies at times that just never got traction. Because it's a shape, it's a thing. And that's what was so interesting about these is the shape is so familiar to a couple of those very popular wedges that I think it finally gives people something. They sit it down and it's like, oh, that's Cobra. Holy shit. And yeah. And, yeah.
Can you, am I doing myself a disservice not playing 3D printed irons right now?
I think everyone who has the ability to play 3D printed irons as far as access or whatever else or willingness to is doing themselves a disservice. I've been lucky. I got to test a few things recently after the Morgan Cup, a couple different irons that I went to, and I was like, ah, oh, these, you know, that's great. Like it's a player CB, but then I put these back in the bag today and I'm like, that's right. And it's
that's right.
They are of all the hundreds and hundreds of sets I've hit, I've never hit and experienced an iron like them. The expansions and the things that could come soon, later, whenever, it's only going to make it stronger. But they are complete and they're versatile. Because like I've taken mine a degree and a half a week, and they're still just as versatile as they are in standard. Because it allows me to hit the gaps I need because the spin is so controlled. That's the biggest thing for me is that I don't get big variances, and it's wild in an iron like that. So yeah, in my opinion, if you have the ability to go hit them and have access to them in one way, shape, or form, I think everybody should, and to give them a really fair look. They're more than deserving. But they've got that barrier issue of price versus new versus concept and everything else. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm excited for the future because it's like your show with Doug, like it's changing rapidly.
Yeah. We'll see what that means in 2, 3, 5, 10 years.
Exactly.
I had a chat with my dad the other day. Our mutual friend, Andy, who on again, off again, THP member, A-Mart, is a local buddy I play with every other weekend now. And he put the new, is it Max K? Is that what he put in the bag? Yeah. Yep. And loves it. And my dad hit it the other weekend. And he's like, all right, put my order. And I was like, oh my God, like that's not who he is. He doesn't do that. So I was talking to him this week and he's getting his head wrapped around irons for next year. He's like, man, I really like that Cobra driver. I should look at their irons. I was like, oh, are you going to buy some 3D printed ones? He goes, no. I was like, why not? It'll be fun. And you know, it is funny how that barrier does exist a little bit with respectfully. It makes sense. I mean, we have,
absolutely.
What would you call them? Not project, prototype irons or
concepts. Yeah.
Pre-concept iron is the word I was looking for, that inevitably have a different price point than what you see on the market, but you know, YOLO, right?
Yep. I mean, it was a hell of a leap for me to take to jump in on a set. Cause I got the limiteds before they did the 3DP tours, the 500 set thing. And that was a massive, oh my God, I hope I don't get murdered at home in my sleep. And it turns into it's probably my favorite golf purchase of all time.
So I have a tough question for you, ignoring the part where Doug was talking about the super one of one stuff. There've been, you know, ticklings of MB versions or smaller versions that have floated around on tour that are unique to specific tour players. You know, let's say those become accessible. Do you start thinking about another itch you need to scratch, or are you super happy with where you are?
I would seriously consider pitch 9-8.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Just because in that style of iron, I know I can control my ball flight a little bit better in the greens and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at a point with that where as all of a sudden, as you know, I hit the ball high now, contrary to 20 years ago or 15 years ago or whatever it was. I think that's and knowing what they can do with the lattice structure and everything in the 3DP, I think the concessions will be much less. So, and I think that opens up a new window and the potential of combos and things of that nature in that, I think you bring in whole other player demographics, potentially. The cost is still what the cost is, but you're expanding horizons. And the performance, if it continues to speak like it does right now, I think you break those barriers consistently. And nobody else is doing it. And as far as I know, nobody's close to even considering it with the patents and everything that they hold.
That's so interesting. And how do other companies react if these do take off? And especially if they find ways to make it a hair cheaper and close the gap, how do companies react when the product, you know, stands out its own from a performance perspective and the size presentation that it has?
Absolutely.
In a market where size absolutely matters. You know, we're very opinionated when it comes
to
top line thickness.
I'm one of the worst. I acknowledge that.
I have a couple more things that I want to talk about, but I think what's best is let's save it for another show. I want to talk do an apparel roundup with you this year, because I know you're a bit of a shirt and apparel junkie like I am. But we'll save it for another show, and I really want to get into handicaps, but I don't think there's enough bandwidth on the internet today to handle that kind of conversation.
Well, that one needs to happen, so we'll do it.
And it's going to be one very specific thing, and you folks will hear from us on this 10 or 12 month low, the most annoying thing in handicaps. James, anything from you today? Anything you targeted? Concerns, thoughts, comments, skinny notes?
I'm getting a healthier version of me, but I got nothing, man. I'm just living life and enjoying everything that goes with it. So I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man. I miss the boys over there. We had a good time earlier this year.
You'll be back.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully no one judges me next year for how goofy I am out there, but we always have a good time. Buddy, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you.
Absolutely, dude.
Hey, if you guys are playing golf this weekend and you're in a climate like mine, you better make it count and have a good time doing it, because we are at the cusp of pure disappointment sitting at home at 5 o'clock. It's dark and I want to fight someone, but it's okay. We're going to be okay. We're going to get through it. We've got some really great shows lined up in the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned for those. And there was one other thing I had to say. James, you ready for it?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go Blue Jays.
Oh,
crowd, man.
Yay, baseball.
Yeah, baseball. Blue Jays, come on, man. Take down the Giants of baseball, or the Giants of roster building.
Payroll.
Payroll. Take down those Dodgers. We'll see you guys next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey everybody, Don Brown, back here at Shaft Grip University. This question is about our Icon Grip. One of you guys really like them, as is the feedback we've gotten from a ton of people. The question was, are we going to see this stock on any clubs coming out here in the next couple years? Yes, we do have a couple programs coming where you will see Icon as a stock grip. It's also going to be available as a custom option and also in the aftermarket. So plenty of places to get this grip out. Tremendous feedback so far. Everybody here is playing it. Everybody loves it. Hope you guys try it out soon.
THP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network.
Your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.